Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
World is flooding down in Texas. All of the telephone lines are down.
909 on KDXU. It is flooding down in Texas. Stevie Ray Vaughan, Texas Flood, name of the song. There's some story about the stories about that song in a minute, but I want to talk about the flooding down in Texas. Holy smokes. So I found a time-lapse video of the Guadalupe River, and it is, shocking, maybe not the word, but it is stunning that that little river. There were people right on the edge of the bridge when the flooding started, and they had to keep moving up and up and up and up until, I mean, the river was, what did it go, 30 feet up the road there? It was unbelievable. Anyway, the numbers on that flood in Texas now, sadly, 82 dead, 10 missing, 10 girls missing. And then the bodies so far, 68, they found the bodies of the worst flooding in Kerr County history. Guadalupe River went crazy. My wife, who her whole life, my wife has been serving amongst young women, whether it was Girl Scouts or church leadership amongst young women. So my wife had probably gone to 25 or 30 girls' camps. There was a girls' camp up the mountains, not an LDS church one, but a girls' camp where young girls between the ages of, I think it was 10 and 18. And the flooding happened so fast. They told them it was going to rain a little bit. The flooding happened so fast it washed them, and it happened in the middle of the night. And that's why so many young people were killed, too. Just unbelievable flooding down in Texas. And by the way, I grew up, spent a lot of time in South Texas, and Kerrville was not very far, like an hour away from where we lived. Just not too far from San Antonio. But, if you have a chance to catch that time-lapse video of the Guadalupe River and the Texas flooding, it's stunning. I'm not sure. I guess you just do a search, Texas flooding, Guadalupe River, something like that. And the time-lapse, it's 30-minute time-lapse video. The river went from a regular river, like, to halfway up that road there. The very steep road, and unbelievable. Anyway, we hope the rescue efforts now actually are fruitful, and they're able to find a few people alive that are missing, but very sad there. Very frivolous note, side note on that. That song I just played, Texas Flood by Stevie Ray Vaughan. I don't know if frivolous is the right word, but my sons and I, we had this fun tradition on Tuesday night. So I was kind of Mr. Mom. My wife worked during the days. And when my boys were, I would say, especially my two middle boys, they were like 10 to 13, right in there. They would come home from school on Tuesdays knowing that Tuesday was rock band night. Now, my wife was a court clerk for many, many, many years, and court was always on Tuesday nights. So we knew Mom wasn't going to be home till around 7, maybe sometimes all the way up till 9, but sometimes, you know, she'd get off early 6 or 6:30. But usually it was around 7, 7:30 that she would get home. So the boys would come home from school. They knew. They didn't schedule other stuff for Tuesday nights because they knew Tuesday was rock band night for me and the boys. And we would sit there and play rock band. Now, if you're not familiar with rock band, it's a video game, yes, but it's basically you take the role of the members of the band, and I was a guitar player. My son Bryce was the vocalist, the singer, and my son Dallas played the drums. AJ would sometimes play, and he would sing, but he wasn't really into it like the other two boys. But and we would play rock band for, you know, maybe from 3:30 or 4 until 7 o'clock every Tuesday night. And it was pretty awesome. A great way to bond with my kids. I originally bought the game Rock Band because I am a closet rock rock and roll singer. I wanted to be the lead singer in a band. I mean, that was like, you know, for me, there were like three things that I either wanted to be a quarterback in the NFL. That obviously didn't happen. I wanted to be lead singer in a rock and roll band. And then my, like, fallback plan was to be the voice of the Texas Longhorns or Utah Jazz or BYU Cougars. Those were the things I wanted to do. That was life goals for me. I never did make it to any of those. Got a pretty cool job though, talking on the radio every day now. But yeah, I never made it to any of those. But anyway, I bought Rock Band with the idea that I would be the singer and my sons would learn how to play the instruments and back me up. Well, my one son, Bryce, decided, nah, Dad, I don't really want to play your plastic guitar. I want to be the singer. And so I had, in the meantime, learned to play the guitar for the game. And I realized that as we started this tradition, that I would never get to be the lead singer. So later on, they came out with a version of Rock Band that had harmonies. And so I would play guitar and sing harmony while Bryce sang leads. And that was actually really hard. I have a lot of respect for someone who can play an instrument and sing at the same time. That's a hard thing to do because you basically have to do, you have to multitask. And that's really hard. But anyway, we were pretty hardcore. I had printed out, so those not familiar with the game Rock Band, you each had your own, you know, part you had to play, a little melody line in the game, and then you get a score based on how many notes you got right during the course of the song. And if all of you got every note right for the whole song, then you received, you know, you got the dopamine, you got the stars, and great job and all this stuff. So there were three or four songs where my sons and I could play perfect on. One of them was "Say It Ain't So" by Weezer, but it was a lot of work. It was, you know, we practiced hard. We had a lot of fun. I'd print out a spreadsheet that had the name of the song, and then it had a category for what my percentage was, what Dallas's was, what Bryce's was, and then our overall team percentage. And that way we could pick songs. And there were certain songs each of us liked. Bryce, there's certain songs he liked to sing more than others. Certain songs I liked to play more than others. And Dallas actually ended up being the most talented of all of us, because what he did, so when you play the guitar on a game like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, you're playing a facsimile of the real thing. You're not really plucking strings. You're hitting this little plastic thing, and your fingerings are not really two or three fingerings. It's you're really hitting a button. Anyway, but Dallas decided, he got so good at playing the drums that he turned on, you can turn on the game something called real drums, which means that his little drum set, and we bought the expansion with the cymbals and everything, his little drum set was actually like a real drum set, and he played the real drum part for these songs. He was better. He was really, really good. Anyway, but we were pretty hardcore, and it's a memory. Now my boys are all grown. They've got kids, and they're going on with their lives, and they have better, higher priorities than playing a silly game with their dad. But I got to tell you, the Tuesday Night Rock Band thing for me is still now a very treasured memory. And I don't know if anybody else was into it like we were. We were pretty hardcore, but we had a lot of fun. I could play perfect on, I would say, about 10 songs. One of which, I played a song, Sweet Child of Mine from Guns N' Roses. I played that over and over and over, sometimes when the boys weren't home yet, too. So I could get a perfect score. And I finally did get 100% on Sweet Child of Mine. But the main riff on Sweet Child of Mine was actually fairly easy. But the guitar solo was brutal. And, it took a long time. But bottom line is, you know, create memories with your kids. Maybe it's not Rock Band. Maybe it's playing, have a catch, right? Like a Field of Dreams, going out in the backyard and throwing the ball around with your kids or whatever. But and to relate it back to what I was talking about, Texas Flood, I'd never heard that song before until it came out with one of the versions of Rock Band, and I got to be the Stevie Ray Vaughan and play guitar for that song. And no, I never did get 100% on Texas Flood. Too hard. But I think I got 99 a couple of times. Never did quite get to 100. So anyway, sad for the folks down in Texas. Hopefully they will figure out how to get that thing, rescue those that need to be rescued. And I was reading the story. So I got an email this morning from the Celeste Molloy people. Her media liaison, her name is Bella. Bella sent me this email, and I guess Celeste is going to speak tomorrow at a reunion of sorts in the Korean War Memorial. And so I was like, well, okay. You know, I get these kinds of emails all the time from all our elected reps, you know, Curtis and Mike Lee, et cetera, et cetera. So I get them all the time. I didn't really think much about it until I started. I read it, but I did read it a little bit more. And she said, so the email reads like this. Tomorrow, Representative Celeste Molloy will join the Utah National Guard at the Korean War Memorial in Cedar City to honor the veterans of the 213th Field Artillery Battalion and recognize student ambassadors from the University of Utah who have dedicated themselves to preserving their legacy. It will take place July 6, 2025. That was, yesterday, at 7:30 p.m. I thought it was tomorrow, but I guess it was yesterday. Anyway, at the Korean War Memorial. And then background. And I was like, you know, this is kind of interesting a little bit. Why is she honoring this particular group? And here's the background. 74 years ago, during the Korean War, 4,000 Chinese and North Korean soldiers stumbled upon a Utah National Guard artillery unit while trying to escape a U.S. infantry offensive. The enemy soldiers launched a surprise attack in the middle of the night. The 240 Utah artillerymen fought for their lives, and not a single life was lost in what became known as the Miracle at Gapyeong. The Miracle at Gapyeong. I'm like, okay, now you got my interest. Now I need to know more. And so I did, you know, like modern day, right? I did a search on it. I found out there is a documentary and a 12-minute video about the Miracle at Gapyeong. Introduction by Jeffrey R. Holland from the Quorum of the Twelve in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But basically, I don't have time to play the whole video. I'd like to, but it's pretty cool. But 12 minutes long. And basically what happened was, a group of young men in southern Utah, the 213th, remember, this is back in 1950. And they were what a lot of people call weekend warriors. They were in the National Guard. Guys will do that one weekend a month. They go and train around, stumble around in the hills and act like soldiers, but they're not really soldiers, right? And make a little extra money for their families and maybe, you know, get a little pride in serving their country. This was 5 years after World War II. But then sometimes things happen, and the Korean War broke out, and the 213th got called up. And what that means is they got called to active duty. They were going to go to Korea. No kidding. Seriously, a bunch of guys, 240 guys from Cedar City and Panguitch and Parowan and Kanab and St. George and Washington City and Santa Clara and Ivins was just a little, I don't know if there was anybody from Ivins or not. It was just a little town back then, but Hurricane and all the other little towns in the area had one or two guys that were weekend warriors that got called up to go to Korea. So first they went from St. George up to, I forget the name of the base, but up in Washington State to get some real training. And before they left, most of them, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they met with some of the leaders in the area. And one of the leaders, a guy by the name of Snow, who was the temple president, St. George Temple president, spoke to the group and said, listen, if you will, even while you're in the Army, and we know the atmosphere that the Army can promote somewhat as far as the lifestyle, but he promised these boys from southern Utah, he said, if you'll live a righteous lifestyle, if you'll stand by what you believe in, I promise you that not one of you will be killed in Korea. Well, that's a pretty big promise, right? Sending these local boys to a war zone, these lightly trained weekend warriors from Utah to a war zone in Korea. But that was the promise he made. And by the way, Miracle at Gapyeong, 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 if you want to watch the video. It's only 12 minutes. It's pretty cool. Anyway, they went. They went to Washington, got trained, and then they got sent to Korea. And they got set up on a hillside. And, you know, artillery units, you don't have to be that close to the actual action. So, you know, they're an artillery unit. So, basically, most of the job that they had was, okay, here's sector B, click 8, you know, square grid, square 7, fire artillery there. Well, while they're doing that, while they're set up in the mountains away from the really hand-to-hand stuff, a few miles away, the U.S. military launched an offensive against North Korean and Chinese soldiers. And I'm not going to lie, most of what I know about the Korean War I learned from MASH, but they launched an offensive, and over 2,000, let's see if I can find the exact number, over 4,000, rather, Korean and Chinese soldiers were flushed up the hill and toward this 213th, this artillery unit from Utah. It was 51, by the way, 1951, not 1950. These soldiers, these 240 guys from southern Utah in the 213th Battalion, held their ground. Again, these are artillery guys, and yet they were forced into hand-to-hand combat. The 4,000 Korean and Chinese soldiers launched an attack on them, so they were in the way, and the Korean and Chinese soldiers said, well, we got to move these guys or we're in trouble. So a major, major firefight broke out. I mean, this was serious war. You know, howitzers and you know, rifles and even handheld pistols and bayonets and everything. And the Utah boys were outnumbered, what is that, 18 to 1 or something like that? 240 versus 4,000. It almost sounds like what happened to General Custer. We had the anniversary of General Custer where he took some, like, 200 soldiers and thought he was going to fight 100 or so Indians and ended up with several thousand Indians wiping General Custer out. It kind of seems like what should have happened to the 213th. But remember the promise made to these young men. If you will listen, do what's right, and stand up for your values, not one of you will be killed. How could this promise be fulfilled when they are outnumbered 18 to 1? Unbelievable, because it happened. And again, you can watch a video of what happened to the Miracle at Gapyeong online if you want to. But, wow. I mean, just clean-cut young men from southern Utah hold their own against 4,000 Chinese and North Korean soldiers, and not one single southern Utahan was killed. Cool story. Anyway, check it out if you get a chance. The Miracle at Gapyeong, Gapyeong. And again, pretty cool that Celeste Malloy, Representative Malloy, was able to go and speak last night about it. Pretty sure it was last night. It's July 6th. Yeah, that was last night in Cedar City. I wanted to get Celeste on today, but I was not able to connect with her. So, but still kind of a cool story. All right, what do we have coming up? Oh, I was going to let me real quick give you a couple of news updates from stuff happening in the area. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about AI, artificial intelligence, and the three laws of robotics. And when we come back, right now, real quick updates, fire. So the Forsyth fire up by Pine Valley, 47% containment. They have pulled most of the crew. There were over 700 at one point firefighters up there. There are now 54 personnel left. That's not to say the fire is out, but it is, for the most part, contained. They can kind of send it the way they want it to go. So unless we get some heavy winds or another lightning strike, they're in pretty good shape. That's the Forsyth fire. The Franz Canyon fire, now 84% contained. That's the huge one up by Bryce Canyon that burned 35,000 acres. They, again, have gone to a small crew now because they feel like they have it under control. There was a fire in Rockville. That's that little town right next to Springdale, out by Zion National Park. They're not sure how it started, but it was started near a power pole. But one of the residents there pulled his hose out, his garden hose out, and started spraying it, and actually helped to control it a little bit until Hurricane Valley Fire and Rescue got there and put it out the rest of the way. But that's pretty cool. And then I saw the story on the wire. There was a fire last night. No, excuse me, Friday night in Burrell. Have you ever been to Burrell? It's out west of Cedar City, a little town, a little farm town. A barn burned. You're like, okay, barn burns down. You know what? Barns are pretty much kindling, right? I mean, most barns are wooden and there's hay. And I mean, you just think, okay, barns burn. That happens. But when I read more on the fire, the story on the fire said not only did the barn burn down, but it happened so fast they didn't have time to get the livestock out. So inside the barn, livestock, I don't know, cows, horses, something burned, as well as a tractor and other various farm equipment that they kept in out of the elements in that barn. Authorities say about half an acre burned as well, but the big loss was the barn and the contents inside the barn. Kind of sad there. All right, we've coming up on the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break for weather and I can tell you the forecast's not pretty. Lots and lots of hot and not any wet. So anyway, that's coming up. And again, when we come back, I want to talk about artificial intelligence. Is AI touching your life yet? Well, I got news for you. Whether it has yet or not, it will. We'll talk about that when we return here on The Andy Griffin Show on this Monday, July the 7th. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 934 on KDXU. So this weekend we got in the mail. We got a package. That's pretty cool, right? You get a package in the mail. I know today's day and age of Amazon and all that stuff, getting a package isn't as big a deal as it used to be. But still, got a package, and it was from State Farm. Oh, man, it's spam or something. No, this was a package. So, as many of you know, insurance has gotten kind of expensive. That's an understatement of the year, I know. Insurance, whether it be auto insurance or home insurance or whatever, kind of, it's just gone through the roof. It's crazy. So, about a month ago, my wife and I started shopping around for better deals. We're in this weird transition in life where we had kids at home and we were paying for them, and then even when my daughter was on a mission and studying abroad and stuff, we're still paying for her auto insurance. And now both of them got married, and so we're transitioning them off. But I still own three cars, and then even though the one car never gets driven, we have to insure it, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, long story short, maybe too late, I know, but we decided we were going to shop around, see if we could find a better deal on car insurance. And as it happens, my daughter married a guy who knows a lot about insurance. Anyway, he referred us to someone, and we decided to switch to State Farm Insurance. It's not a commercial for them. I'm just telling you that this particular guy, we called, by the way, three different State Farm agents. They all had different quotes, so, you know. Anyway, this guy had the best numbers, and so we decided that we were going to go with him. And he said, oh, and by the way, did you know you could save money if you qualify as a good driver? And we're like, well, what does that mean? I haven't had a ticket in a long time. My wife's never had a ticket. We're good drivers. He's like, well, no. What we do is we send you this little thing, little box, really not very big, smaller than your phone, like a third the size of your phone. He says you stick it in your car, and it connects somehow with the Bluetooth, et cetera, et cetera. He says it actually will tell us, back at State Farm, you know, how many times you break the speed limit, if you brake hard, if you, all kinds of stuff, right? I was like, okay. And my wife's like, okay. And They said, we're going to send that to you. Install that in your cars, and you can actually save, I think on my truck, it was $70-something, and her car, 50-something, and in our third car, it could save like $20 or $30 because it never gets driven. But these little devices track speed, hard braking, and fast acceleration, phone usage while driving, time of day the vehicle is used, the mileage you travel, and the location that you travel in. And again, the idea is save money, right? So as we're unpacking these things and talking about them last night, my wife and I were like, it's kind of creepy, right? Because basically, you give it permission to track you wherever you go, how fast you get there, etc. And State Farm now has, and I don't know what they're going to do with this information, now has the information of exactly where we are at any time, at least where our car is, at any time, any day, any time of year. It's kind of creepy. It's kind of weird. So I drove to work this morning. And, it tracked my trip. And I guess it sent back data that I went too fast on Red Hills Parkway or something. I don't know. Anyway, the agent swears it will never dock you for breaking the law, but it will save you if you keep the law. And so as I'm driving to work today, I'm like, you know, I'm on one road. The speed limit is 45, and I'm going like 49. And I'm like, you know what? I think I just cost myself a quarter or something. I don't know, you know. And on another road, the speed limit was 40, and I was going a little faster than that. And I'm like, oh, man, there's another road's 25. I was going like 29 or 30. And I'm like, man, this messes with your head. And my wife said something last night. She said, I don't know if I like them knowing where we are at all times. And then she said, but I guess as long as we're not doing anything wrong, it doesn't matter. And that reminds me of way back when I first started this show, I had a guy call in, and I had asked this question. I'm like, you know what? The government knows a lot about me, but I'm a good guy. I don't do a lot of stupid stuff. In fact, I do very little. I don't do anything against the law. I don't think maybe speeding, but I said, what do I care if they know? And this guy called in. He said, well, here's the thing. Okay, you feel like you're not doing anything wrong, right? But what if they decide that what you do is wrong? What if they decide that playing video games is against the law and you pick up and you start your Xbox and the government knows you're playing and all of a sudden they come busting down your door and arrest you? And I said, well, that's ridiculous. That'll never happen. He said, oh, really? Has it ever happened anywhere else in the world where the government decides you can't do? Do you know in North Korea, they can't. They can only use one certain browser that, and it goes through the government. There's no free speech there. I get on the radio and talk. What if they decide that the things I say aren't the things that they want to hear? Well, but I'm a good guy. I only say good stuff, right? According to me. So now I have, along with all my internet stuff being tracked all the time, And Netflix knows exactly what movies you watched and how long, and same with YouTube TV and Hulu and Disney Plus. They know exactly what you're watching. In fact, if you watch a few shows on that, it'll start suggesting other shows that are similar to the ones you watched. Yes, that happens a lot. So they're tracking that. They're tracking, you know, what we're doing on the internet. Apparently, State Farm now has the power to track me wherever I go and how fast I get there. I'm like, this is maybe getting a little too much. Is there a solution? Well, the thing that's crazy about it. So, you know, Big Brother movie, Big Brother book, and other dystopian society, they talk about how the government knows everything about us and they manipulate us. Well, the weird thing is, like this whole State Farm thing, the whole manipulation and them knowing exactly everything about me and how fast I go and all that, it was so easy for them to do. All they had to do was promise me and my wife, hey, you know what? We could save you. I mean, the grand total of savings for the three cars, if we're quote-unquote good drivers, was like $150 a year. That's a pretty cheap bribe. Hey, can we know where you're going, how fast you're getting there, what time you're going, and all this stuff? We'll save you, maybe we'll save you $150 a year, maybe, if you're a good driver. And we bit. We're like, okay. It wasn't, they weren't extorting me. They weren't saying you have to do this. It's a law. They said, hey, we'll save you a little bit of money. Just $150 a year. And for that, we'd like to know everything about you. Everything that you do. Richard Marks on wherever you go, whatever you do, I'll be right here waiting for you. Well, they'll be right there watching you is what. Yeah. And like I said, I'm not sure how I feel about this. And I'm curious to see. So one of the little boxes they gave us went on my Mustang, which, like I said, never gets driven anymore. But we put it in the wrong spot because the Mustang is old enough. It doesn't have Bluetooth and all that. And so we're supposed to put it like on the windshield or something like that. And we're supposed to remove it and restick it on glass, I guess. I don't know. But I am curious. We haven't tried that yet. I'm curious how good the little sticky is. Because you just peel the thing and you stick it right there to the window or the dashboard or wherever you want to stick. I'm curious, is this sticky thing really, really good? I'm assuming this is like high quality, you know, Gorilla Glue, Stick'Em type stuff. And we may have a hard time ever moving it again. But I don't know. But you got to figure, they're probably making these things for the long term. They want it to be stuck in your car for a long, long time. They want to collect your money. And it's going to be interesting to see. If I decide to take it off, how hard is that thing going to be to remove? We'll find out, I guess. But I was just amazed, again, that at how little... I wouldn't say I sold my soul, but how little I gave them anything they wanted for $10 a month, $11 a month. Yeah. I think that might be our downfall eventually, especially those of us that are, what's the word, frugal? What, you could save me a couple hundred bucks a year? All right, here's everything. You got it. I would like to say I would never sell my values and morals and principles for that much money, but or for any amount of money, but we sure sold our location for cheap.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
9:48 on KDXU. I did promise we were going to talk about AI a little bit. This is fascinating to me. And by the way, I did get a text. If you want to text me, 467-5842, 435-467-5842. Somebody asked me, how much leeway do you give on these little driving monitoring things? Like if I'm passing a truck on the interstate and speed up to 85 because someone is coming up behind me, do I get dinged? And I don't know the answer to that, but I will know the answer to that here in the next few months as it records everything that I'm doing. We'll see. All right, now on to AI. So this blows me away, right? Today I got on ChatGPT. And there's a cool story about AI. I'm gonna talk about it in a minute, but I got on ChatGPT and I said, hey, write a monologue about AI, about artificial intelligence, in the style of Andy Griffin from KDXU. That's all I put. And it said, absolutely, here's a brief, folksy monologue about AI in the voice and style of Andy Griffin from KDXU. Friendly, conversational, with a hint of curiosity and caution. And then it says, Andy, in a warm, down-to-earth tone. This is what it says I would have said about AI. I'm going to read this. You can tell me what you think. Well, I'll tell you, everywhere you turn these days, somebody's talking about AI, artificial intelligence. It's in your phone, your car, probably even your fridge if it's fancy enough. Now, I'm no computer scientist, but I know this. AI is not just science fiction anymore. It's real. It's powerful, and it's moving fast. We've got computers writing news stories, answering questions, even helping folks with their medical care. But here's the thing. We've got to be smart about it. AI can do a lot of good for sure. Oh, good, sure. But it can't replace common sense, compassion, or good old-fashioned human judgment. It's a tool, not a brain, and certainly not a heart. So, yeah, let's use it wisely. Let's ask the hard questions, set some boundaries, and remember that just because a machine can do something doesn't mean it should. Because at the end of the day, what really matters, people, not programs. Does that sound like something I would have said? I'm going to say, yeah, kind of. I mean, wow. You know what I mean? At the bottom of it, it says, let me know if you like a version that's a little more humorous or focused on a specific aspect of AI. I'm like, wait a minute. This is getting a little too weird here. How did it know that I speak in a, what did it call it? A friendly conversational with a hint of curiosity and caution. Is that how you would describe how I speak? I'm going to ask my wife about that. Is that accurate, honey? Or maybe Mello, somebody that listens to me a lot. My dad, maybe he would know. It's crazy to me. So I got playing with it some more. I had it do a story about mental health and how women are being diagnosed with depression at a 33% rate and men at only a 20% rate. Why? And it wrote a really good story about that. And I'm just like, what is going on here? So I found a couple of articles on AI. First, I did a search. What is AI? Artificial intelligence refers to the ability of a computer system to perform tasks that typically require human intelligence, such as learning, problem solving, and decision making. AI systems use algorithms and data to simulate human intelligence and achieve specific goals. So, again, I'm no expert on AI, but it seems like to me, AI is about as good as whoever programs it. Whatever, I mean, it's faster. It's you know, it can do things that we can't do a lot quicker. But is AI the answer to all our questions? Is you know, nowadays, you know, Google search. You go out there and you search, right? And it used to be when you do a search on something, you would get a list of websites of where to go to find the answer to your question. Now, if you search on something through Google or whoever, it actually gives you the answer from AI. And then you have to, at that point, you know, you read its answer, and then you can kind of go down below that and find a few links where it kind of got its information and where you could maybe go glean your own information. But we're on the very tip of the iceberg with this AI. The thing that scares me, and yes, I was a big Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury fan back in the day, and I was like, we need to have some safety rails, some guardrails, right? Sleep in the top bunk. If you're a restless sleeper, probably out of a guardrail up, right? Or you're going to fall out and bust your head. Well, AI is potentially very dangerous. AI potentially could decide that maybe this planet is better without humans. And I know you're going, oh, come on, don't be so paranoid. But think about it. There was a study done, I think it was done by either the Secret Service or the FBI recently, about it told AI to solve a problem. And the problem, this was all simulated, by the way. This didn't really happen. It happened in a simulation. The problem could only be solved by eliminating a person that was in the way, that was causing the problem. And AI determined that the best way to proceed was to eliminate the person, to kill the person. Well, the person that was in the way also had access to AI, and it programmed AI to protect him at all costs. And what you ended up with was two AIs battling in the simulation for the life of this man. There were no ethics involved. It was the one AI said, I got to solve the problem. I'm going to kill this guy. The other AI said, well, I've been programmed to not let this guy die. And a simulated war ensued between these two artificial intelligences. And that's where, that's kind of where I'm leaning with AI. It's like, okay, we have no guardrails. What if AI decides, or the programmer of AI decides, okay, we're going to do some things, we just don't want humans to get in the way. And we talked about it last week a little bit on the show, the problem teachers are running into with AI. In college, they're getting AI to help them write their papers. In high school, because high school kids being the way they are, I was one once, they not only are getting AI to help them, they're really getting AI to do the work for them. Not just writing papers, but in solving, and somebody actually just texted me and wanted to know what I thought about AI writing papers and stuff. But honestly, it's a major problem. And high school teachers are telling me, they're not just using AI to help them cheat, to help them to achieve the goals faster. They're using AI to do all the work for them. AI is. And if you're a school teacher, how do you even figure out which ones are AI and which ones aren't? You can tell AI, you can say, hey, solve this problem for me. Say it's a math problem. And the teacher says, well, you got to show your work. Hey, AI, show the work too. It'll do it. Anyway, AI scares me. One of the things back when Isaac Asimov was in the thick of his writing career, he was a great science fiction writer, one of the best ever. In fact, my favorite. Isaac Asimov came with something called the Three Laws of Robotics. Now, in this instance, his mind, you know, robotics and artificial intelligence were kind of the same thing. But he had three specific rules, and here's the three laws of robotics. Number one, a robot, AI, may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. That was rule number one. Rule number two, a robot, AI, must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Remember, the first law was no human beings can be harmed by the action of AI. And then rule number three, a robot must protect its own existence, the little caveat, as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. In other words, Asimov proposed, and this was way before we really had AI, he proposed, let's put the guardrails up, and the guardrails should be, number one, first and foremost, no human shall ever be harmed by a machine. The problem with that is they're working so hard to make AI think on its own that it may decide, AI may decide that, you know what, humans are the problem, or a human is the problem, and therefore, in order to solve whatever the problem that needs to be solved, in order to solve it, I have to eliminate humans or human. And without ethics, there are no ethics for AI, right? Without ethics of whoever programmed them anyway, it's just going to decide, well, we need to get rid of this person. Therefore, the problem will go away. How would you like to be thought of as expendable by a computer, by an artificial intelligence? I mean, we value life. Look at what we do to save every human life we can in every instance. The whole pharmaceutical and medical industries, the idea of saving a life is the most important thing. Sometimes when someone has a DNR, you can override that. If you're a relative and you say, no, I want you to save him or her. So we value life so much as a species. And yet we are giving permissions now to AI to make decisions for us. And some of those decisions might end up being, yeah, human expendable. Let's get rid of the human. And then everything will be okay. That's scary to me. Is anybody minding the store? Is anybody keeping an eye on this stuff? Is it Elon Musk's values that... is he going to be the one that saves mankind? Or maybe it'll be too late. I don't know. It's all pretty scary. Read more about it. There's a great article at Deseret.com about AI becoming people's gods. Yeah. That's how scary it is. We'll talk to you tomorrow.